Last August, I stood before you here and I began a discussion about a divine idea whose time has come, the idea that we call co-creation. And I did this in the context of us beginning at that time a co-creative process for bringing into our experience a new minister. And we're still in that process, and hopefully very soon it will come to fruition. And what I'd like to do here today is to continue that discussion about this idea of co-creation, and specifically I want to bring it down to a somewhat more practical level than what I was speaking about before, simply because this is the very essence of what religious science is all about, which is expressing the presence through practical means. So hopefully today I will bring a more practical explanation of this process that we call co-creation. And if you missed that talk last August, my understanding is they have a few extra copies of it, and you can pick it up at the tape table if you're interested. And what I'd like to do is a very quick review and start by stating that co-creation is not a technique. That co-creation is actually the state of consciousness that unfolds through our own personal healing. And we call it co-creation because it is done through the power of spirit, and it is also done in the context of our relationships with one another. Because you see, this state of consciousness that I'm talking about is really what we could call a state of agreement or a state of consensus. And I'm going to be talking a lot more about this today. But when we are in that particular state of mind, that state of consciousness, what happens is that spirit can flow more freely through us and create newness in our life. And that is what this path of healing that we call co-creation is really about. It's about creating newness in our life. And the very principle that brings about that state of consciousness, as in all things, is love. Now, one of the other important things about co-creation that I spoke of previously is the great demand that it places upon us. And the demand of co-creation is that we must do our own spiritual work. We no longer can afford the luxury of a grudge. That we have to take responsibility for our own personal healing in the context of whatever situation or condition we experience in our life. So with that said, I would like to just step into some practical aspects of co-creation and start with what I call the three principles of co-creation, which are clarity, consensus, and commitment. And let me begin with clarity, simply because clarity always indicates its own action. That when we have clarity of mind, it is always simple to do whatever we need to do. All of the difficulty that most of us face in our lives arises out of our own uncertainty. What should I do? How should I handle this? And oftentimes we don't even know where to begin to resolve some situation or problem in our life. The founder of religious science, Ernest Holmes, once said that spiritual mind treatment, which is the form of affirmative prayer that we teach in religious science, that spiritual mind treatment has at its purpose to produce clarity in our thinking, clarity in our mind. And so it is that there are two activities that we must engage in order to produce this clarity that I'm talking about. And the first is calmness. Before we can get clear, we must get calm, because we all know how difficult it is to think clearly when we are in the midst of an upset of some sort. So we have to develop this discipline and this skill of how we step back from a situation and find a way to bring calmness into our being, to bring a sense of balance and equanimity. And it is a skill that can be learned. And what that calmness does, it precedes our ability to concentrate. Because the other activity of clarity is concentration, which is our ability to focus mentally on whatever situation or difficulty we may face in our life. And it is essential that we have this ability to concentrate, because when we concentrate on something and we give it our full attention, something greater is always revealed. For this is where the new ideas come from that lead us out of whatever difficulty we may have in our life. And it is also the same process that we use to create whatever newness that we want in our life, that we must give it our full attention, we must focus upon it. So the two activities of clarity are calmness and concentration. The second principle of co-creation is consensus. And consensus literally means agreement at the level of our mind, or agreement at the level of our ideas. And there's a wonderful scriptural passage that emphasizes the importance of this agreement. In the Gospel of Matthew, it says that when two agree on earth, it shall be done by our Father in heaven. Because when we enter into that state of agreement with one or more other people, something mysterious enters into that relationship. It is the presence of spirit or of the divine. Sometimes we hear it referred to as the mastermind principle. But there is always something greater that enters into our relationships when we are in agreement. So that there is a great power for us to work with when we are in a state of consensus or agreement. Now, there are two activities involved in creating consensus, and the first is compassion. If I don't care how my ideas affect you, what motive would I have to change my ideas? That is why compassion is so important. In fact, the word compassion, if we go back into its root meaning, it literally means to suffer together. It essentially means to feel the suffering and the heartache of others. And when we enter into a relationship with other human beings with an open heart and a state of compassion, we are always then motivated to explore newness, to explore something new, to come up with a creative solution that will satisfy both of us. So the first step in developing consensus is to enter into relationship with compassion. And then the second aspect of consensus is communication. And this is something that we hear a lot about in our culture today. There are many books and seminars and various programs and so forth that teach us how to develop high-level communication skills. And oftentimes when we think about communication, we immediately tend to focus on the more expressive aspect of communication, which is the speaking part of communication. But there is also an equally important aspect of communication, which is the skill of listening. And this is really where compassion comes in, because compassion is about learning how to open and to listen. And equally important, of course, is the ability for us to express our own ideas, our own values. But we must be very conscious that it also involves listening. Our tendency when we talk with other people is to be thinking about what we're going to say as soon as they stop. And so when we develop this skill of listening, it's about really being in the openness and the emptiness of true communication. Now, the third principle of co-creation is the principle of commitment. And the two activities that it takes to produce commitment simply are clarity and consensus. And what so often happens is that we go out looking to try to get other people to make commitments to something that we're involved with. And yet, if there is clarity and consensus, commitment will arise naturally. If other people are clear about what it is that you're trying to create, and they are in agreement with what it is that you're trying to create, and they see how it is beneficial to them as well, why wouldn't they be committed to it? What often happens is we start with commitment, trying to get the commitment, and people resist it because they're not really clear about what it's about. And if they were clear, they may not agree with it. So if we take the time to create first clarity and then doing this work, and sometimes it's very, very hard work to build a consensus, but when we take the time to do that, what will arise naturally out of that is the commitment to newness in our lives. Now, another aspect of co-creation that is very important is learning how to deal effectively with conflict. And this is something that most of us are always trying to avoid. And I think one of the things that can serve us here is to understand what I call the three outcomes of conflict. And the first outcome of conflict is what I refer to as a win-lose solution that is based on the principle of conquest, where one person literally conquers the other. One person gets their way and the other person or party does not. They lose. The second outcome of conflict is what is referred to as a lose-lose situation, and it is based on compromise, where neither party really gets what they want, and they get a diminished or compromised version of what it is that they are seeking. And finally, the third and most desirable outcome, and what we are always looking for, is what we refer to as the win-win solution. And that solution is based on consensus, which means that both parties get something that they are both happy with, that there is an agreement at the level of their ideas. And what is important about getting to this win-win solution is to understand that only the party in power can create consensus. That whenever there is a conflict, if one party is in power and has the ability to conquer the situation, to get their way, they are the party that can create the consensus. They are the ones who can say, I am willing to give up my conquest here in order that we can explore and create a consensus, to create an agreement. And what is important to realize is that consensus will always produce a superior result to conquest. And the reason is very simple, and it goes back to something that the Buddha said 2,500 years ago. He said, when you conquer your foe by force, you increase his anger. Conquer by love, and you will reap no after sorrow. You see, because when you seek consensus, that it will produce no karmic liability. There is no payback when you give up your conquest and seek a consensus with another person or another party. And the reason is that love leaves no liability. That is why it's been called the all-consuming flame of truth. There is nothing left to come back, because you can be sure that if you conquer today, the day will come when you will be conquered in return. But if you are willing to step forward in love and give up your conquest and seek a consensus with others based on the principles of truth, then you will always move forward without any concern about future liabilities. Now, in speaking about consensus, it's something that we hear a lot about, and it's a word that we often sort of take for granted. And to begin with, a consensus is not a vote. It is about coming into a complete agreement within a relationship, whether it's two people or a group of people. And so one of the important things about creating a consensus is knowing how to test to see if there truly is a consensus. And what we can do is use what I call the consensus test, which is a two-part test that is based on those principles of clarity, consensus, and commitment. And so the first part of the consensus test is to check and see if there is clarity. To simply ask, does everybody understand what we are agreeing to? That you should never assume that you have consensus. And I know that every single person here has had this experience where you thought you had agreed with somebody else to do something and they went out and did something completely different. And when you called them on it, they said, but this is what we agreed to. And we all know what that's like. And that's why it's oftentimes beneficial to write down what it is that you're agreeing to, not for the purpose of creating some complex legal agreement, but to just help clarify what it is that you're talking about, especially when you're working with a group, to write down what it is that you're agreeing to so everyone can see it and there can be clarity about what it is that you're agreeing to. Now, one of the other things that often happens here is that we're afraid to ask if there's clarity. And so we get what we call pretend consensus. Because we're afraid that if we clearly state what it is that we're supposedly agreeing to, that someone may say no. So it's easier to pretend and get them to, so that you get everyone to say yes, but there's not a clarity about what it is they're agreeing to. So the first step in the consensus test is clarity. The second step in the consensus test is to ask, can you commit to whatever it is that we're agreeing to without feeling compromised or conquered? Can you commit to this without feeling compromised or conquered? Now let's explore a little bit what that means. What does it mean to feel compromised? Well, when we feel compromised, it is when something that we value has been diminished. For instance, if you are in a group of people and you are someone to whom appearance is very important, that beauty is something that you value very much in your life, and they say, we don't care what it looks like, we only care how it works. Well, then what has happened there is your values have been diminished. Now, on the other hand, to be conquered means that you as a person have been diminished. So in that same situation, if those group of people not only say they don't care what it looks like, but that they don't care that you care what it looks like, then you have been conquered. That you feel like you have been diminished. So the test here is, can you commit to something without feeling compromised or conquered? Now that doesn't mean that you're always going to get exactly what it is that you had in mind. But if you feel that you have been treated well by the process by which you came to a conclusion, then you can still commit to that. So this group of people may say, we don't necessarily know what it's going to look like, but we will do everything we can to make it as beautiful as possible. Then you feel like your values and that you have been included and what you value has been included in what has been agreed to. So that is the test for what a consensus really is. Is there clarity about what we're agreeing to, and can you commit to it? Now, obviously, in every situation, there are times when you cannot reach a consensus, and then there are times when you may have to take a vote to move forward. But it's important to be honest about that and say, we couldn't reach consensus, and so we're going to vote and do it on that basis, but then at least everybody trusts the process that you're in. Because the worst possible thing that you could do is to say, okay, we have a consensus, when you don't, and to move forward. And then those people who weren't in agreement, they feel diminished and they don't trust the process. So this is why it's so important in this modern age here, is that there is a big emphasis on process and how we interact with each other in process, and that we need to be able to trust a process to respect our values. Which takes us to the last set of principles here regarding co-creation, which I call views and values. That there are two aspects to the views that each of us hold. First, there is the physical aspect, that the views are what we see or experience through our senses. And that everything that we experience through our senses produces within us a feeling, whether we realize it or not, that we're always, as sentient beings, feeling whatever it is that we experience. And what we're always seeking in our life are good feelings. The only reason we ever want anything is because of the way that it will make us feel. And the way that we want to feel is good. And what we need to recognize is that good feelings are God feelings. The feeling of love, joy, peace, beauty, freedom, that these are the feelings that we are always seeking. Now we need to realize that we also have views within our mental being as well, that within our imagination. And these views are called our opinions, which the dictionary defines an opinion as a firmly held belief not based on factual evidence. See, so our opinions may or may not be true. Because opinions are based on our past experience. They are based on what we have seen or perceived through our senses. And what we need to know is that every opinion produces a feeling. And that what we're always seeking is good feelings, therefore good opinions will produce good feelings. And bad feelings or bad opinions will produce bad feelings. And what we need to know is that any opinion that produces conflict in our life or bad feelings is not based on truth. And I'm not talking about facts or the truth of the senses. I'm talking about the principle of universal truth, which is love. And that is why it has been said that there can be no conflict when truth is in expression. And that truth is always love. And so this is where we sometimes get into trouble. Is because what we value in our life are those good feelings. And what happens here is what we could call the great illusion, is that we tend to think that our views are the source of our values, that our views are the source of those good feelings. And we tend to be attached to those views as the source of our values. And what happens is we get our cause and effect reversed. You see, the things that we value in our life are not the source of our good feelings. They are the outpicturing or the manifestation or the expression of those things that we hold within us, the good feelings that are already within us, which we could call our goodwill. And our goodwill is the will of God. So that the objects, conditions, and circumstances of our life are not the cause of our values, that our opinions are not the cause of our values, that our values are the cause of our good experiences. And so what happens in the process of co-creation, we need to learn how to separate our views from our values. And we need to recognize that every single person has their own way of seeing. So consequently, we will very seldom ever be able to get agreement at the level of views, at the level of opinions. And all we need to do is to look into the body politic of our country today to find that out, because it's all based on ideas, which are always in conflict. So we must go deeper into our own being, into the level of our values, because that is where we will always find agreement. And we look here, we have, 200-300 people here, and I venture to say that there are probably many, many things that we would not agree on, but I would venture to say that we could all agree that it would be good for there to be more love. We could all agree that it would be good for there to be more peace, more joy, more beauty, because these are the things we all value. So this is the place where we always need to start in the process of co-creation, is the place where we can find agreement. And what is important here is that the process of co-creation will never ever ask you to diminish or to surrender or to compromise what you value, because what you value is sacred. What you value is the divinity within you, the God within you, which is the love, the peace, the joy, and the freedom. And so what we are asked to do is simply to release our views as the source of our values and learn how to express our values more fully, to expand our views by expressing our values more fully. By expressing more love, more beauty, more joy into the world, we can expand our views. And there is no limit to that expression. That forms, ideas always have certain limitations upon them, and limitation is inherent within them. But on those values, there is no limit to love. To say that you only have enough love for your friends and family is like saying there's not enough inches left to build a house. It doesn't make any sense. There's no limit to the number of inches in the universe. There's no limit to love. So what I want to do right now is to take these principles that I've talked about here and to put them into a process that you can take and you can start using in your day-to-day life, which is simply a five-step process on how to come to consensus. Step number one is to get out of reaction, to transcend emotional reactivity, because all conflict arises out of reacting to what you don't want. So just recognize whenever there is conflict or upset in your life, it is because you are experiencing something that you don't want. And so we need to then go back and begin to start to do your own work. And you have to develop the ability to find ways to calm yourself down and then begin to concentrate and let that concentration go within to clarify within your own mind what it is that you want to create in your life. What is it that you value that wants to come into expression? Which is the second step, is to get clear about what you want. That you need to do your own work. That you need to separate your views from your values. And to determine what is the quality of God that you're seeking to express in any given situation. The third step is to ask other people what they want. There is nothing that is a greater burden to us than receiving complaints. When people come to us to complain, all they are doing is reacting to what they don't want. And when we hear a complaint, it feels like a great burden that's put on us because we don't know how to deal with it. It's just a complaint. And so what we need to do when people begin to complain is to ask them what it is that they want, to make a request. To simply make that statement. What is your request? Now give them a couple minutes to blow off some steam and then say, what is your request? What is it that you want? Because a complaint is a reaction. A request is a revelation. When a person makes a request, they are revealing something to you. They are communicating their needs. Because until a request is made, there's no end in sight. Complaints will just go on and on and on and on and on. As soon as you ask a person what they want, then they have to do one of two things. They have to either go within or go away. And this is your opportunity to assist them, to coach them into seeing what it is that they truly value, to assist them in separating their views from their values. To ask them, what is it about this situation that you really want? What is it that you want to experience? Now, I fully realize that in our normal day-to-day downtown life, this can be a pretty difficult thing to do, and we don't always have this opportunity. But one of the things about being in a spiritual community like this and participating in many of the activities we have, that you develop the capacity to start using these principles, that we can practice them first with each other, and then we can take them downtown And I've done it, and so I know that it works. But first you have to start practicing with people who understand what it is that you're trying to do. And it's, so it's a matter of building this skill. But the one thing that I have found absolutely to be true is that the more clear that I am, the more clear other people tend to be. That usually when there's confusion in the people around me and a lot of complaints, it's because there's confusion in me about something and a lot of complaint. And that's why, you know, I say that it's so important that we do our own work. So the third step is to ask other people what they want. The fourth step is to find a place of agreement at the level of values, because that's the only place that you will always find agreement. And that is because values never conflict. The qualities of God in any combination are never in conflict. Love does not conflict with beauty. Peace does not conflict with freedom. Joy does not conflict with prosperity. The qualities of God are never in conflict. So that's where you can begin to find a place of agreement. And the fifth step is to work together to create an expanded view that will incorporate your shared values. And I'll be the first to admit that sometimes this is a little difficult, because it takes some time and it takes a lot of faith. Because we start out and we don't always know what the outcome is going to look like. We've had to give up some of our views and we don't know what the newness is going to be. But if it incorporates your values, what do you care? If what you value more than anything is beauty and it turns out to be beautiful, you don't need to have a preconceived idea of what it's going to look like, that it will evolve along the path. And this is not the way that we're used to operating. So this is new for us. Our tendency is we always want to get out and do something. And here we're being asked, in terms of doing, is to go within. And sometimes there is nothing that we can do except to come together to meditate and to pray for a greater expression of our shared values. There is nothing that we can do except to maybe work with a practitioner or a therapist or whatever to do our own emotional and inner healing. But this is the fifth step, is that this idea of working together to create an expanded view that will incorporate your shared values. So, in completion, I'll just do a very quick summary of what I've talked about here. I talked about the three principles of co-creation, which is clarity, consensus, and commitment. And we need to realize that the light of God is what produces clarity. The love of God is what produces consensus. And it is out of the light and the love of God that we develop a commitment to a greater self-expression. The three outcomes of conflict: win-lose, which is based on conquest, lose-lose based on compromise, and win-win based on consensus. And that we talked about the two tests for consensus. Number one, to ask, does everybody understand what they're agreeing to? And number two, can you commit to what is being agreed to without feeling compromised or conquered? And lastly, I talked about views and values and how we expand our views by concentrating on our values. One of the mentors of the New Thought philosophy, Emmett Fox, in his wonderful little essay entitled The Golden Key, began with these words: the solution to every human problem is to simply stop thinking about the problem and to think about God instead. The solution to every human problem is to stop thinking about the problem and to think about God instead. And that's what co-creation is about. It is the process by which we stop thinking about our problems and that we come together to think about God instead. The God that we experience as those values that live and dwell in our hearts. So what I'd like to do now is to have us just simply go within and to anchor these principles in our consciousness through the process of spiritual mind treatment. And so right here and right now in this most holy and sacred moment, I know that each of us, as individualized centers of divine expression, have come together here to commune of the heart and to commingle of heart essence in order that we might create a common center, a greater center through which the love and the light of God can find its highest expression through us individually and collectively as well. For I know that the light of God produces clarity in our thinking. And I know that the love of God produces consensus and agreement in our hearts. And I know that out of that clarity and that consensus, that there arises within each of us now a commitment to a greater self-expression. For I know that the self of which I speak is the divinity within us, which is the love, the joy, the peace, the beauty, the freedom, the wisdom, and the power of God. And I know that as we go forth from this place, that each of us is divinely guided, directed, and protected in all that we do, knowing that we are co-creative centers with the living God that is the Christ in us. That love and that light that blesses all who cross our path. And so it is that I give thanks for this opportunity that we have had here today to open our minds and our hearts to embrace the truth of our being, and in knowing that that truth is love, that awareness of oneness that heals all things. And so it is that I give thanks in knowing that this is so. Amen.